Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
A Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, he fumbled the ball. Now he fumbled it in the air, and it's picked up by Michigan State at the 20, the 15, the 10, and he's going to score. No time left. You've got to be kidding me. That you could not write.
This 106.5 The Ticket sports exclusive is driven by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Here we go. Snap. Spot. Kick on the way. It's no good. It's no good. It's no good. And it's over. The Lions have won it for the first time since 1991. They come to Green Bay and posted improbable victory.
Get ready. It's now Drive Time.
Feeds it Elliott, who shoots straight ahead and pushes it into the end zone. Ezekiel Elliott on a 9-yard touchdown run. And with just under 13 minutes to play in the fourth quarter, the lead has grown.
James for the win. It's gone. LeBron James at the buzzer. Stuns the Chicago Bulls, and the series is tied at 2 games apiece.
Filling in tonight for Mike Miller.
So far in this game, now Loving driving into the lane, through three people, gets the finger roll, and still somehow gets it to go.
Here, 106.5 The Ticket's Jim Cushlin.
Not that bomb.
Oh, yes, indeed. Bum in the house again here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time, ESPN 106.5. The Digger, Jim Cushlin, along with Chris Lemieux, hanging out with me. We are in for Mike Miller today, as we were for Bob France. In for Mike all week, so I'll be back in this big chair coming up tomorrow. And, of course, as always, the big chair is located at the showroom at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. They don't call him the low payment king for nothing. Track him down, Ralph Mahalik Jr. He does so much for us on this show, and he can do so much for you to help you get that great ride at a great price. It is the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Lots of fun we're going to have here in this hour. It's Thursday, so a little bit later in the hour, we'll talk with Stan Yee Jr. for our ARCA Racing Series segment of the week that we do every Thursday. And he's a junior, and senior is kind of what's going on later on Saturday at Flat Rock Speedway, their biggest race of the year up there, the Stan Yee Memorial 150. So we will talk with Stan Yee Jr. about all that coming up a little later in the hour. For all you Tigers fans who may have missed it, in a little while we're going to replay the Anthony Fenech interview he had. He's in Chicago getting ready for the Tigers' 4-game series against the White Sox. Every series from here on in is essentially a big series for the Detroit Tigers. We'll also get you your re-funeral home Detroit Tigers report here in just a few minutes. Wanted to, though, continue, because we ran out of time at the end of the extravaganza, went through the Lions' projected lineup. So before we get to the re-funeral home Tigers report, I want to dive into what ESPN.com, in this case Pat McManaman, had to say on the Browns' projected starting lineup. Of course, camp opening either the 28th or the 29th for pretty much everybody, and that includes the Browns and Lions' first full practices for both next Friday, the 29th, for both Browns and Lions. Went over the Lions lineup and especially wanted to get the insight of Chris Lemieux, since he does some other work over at PrideDetroit.com. And sure enough, as I expected him to say, he said there's a couple things that might be wrong with this. For the Browns, here's what Pat McManaman, and they did this for all 32 teams up there on ESPN.com right now. Here's how they project the Browns starting lineup. First, RG3 at quarterback, which I completely agree with, and I've been telling any Browns fan who will listen since draft day that, yes, he's going to be the starting quarterback. Stop kidding yourselves on that guy they got from USC in the later round. He is not the future quarterback. RG3 is playing for his whole career, which is why I keep thinking and believing that, barring injury, he's actually going to have a halfway decent year, because he's got to know You know, he doesn't get in trouble like Johnny Manziel, but he's got to know if he falls flat and or gets hurt early again, he's probably done as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. He's playing for the rest of his career. So unless an injury happened, I expect him to have a halfway decent year. Don't worry, the kid at USC is not the franchise future quarterback, which I've also been saying since draft night. Running back, right now they have Isaiah Crowell, who, as we know, may not even be with the team, despite his apologies and trying to rectify a situation he created by his idiotic tweets. And anybody listen to the extravaganza, you heard that whole thing last week with Isaiah Crowell and tweeting bad things about cops, and most Browns fans, myself included, saying, you know, cut him at this point. He's not been cut yet, but I don't think he's going to be a starter anymore. I would think it's going to be Duke Johnson. Fullback Malcolm Johnson, can't really argue with that. They're going to either go with both Crowell or Duke Johnson, or they'll have the I formation kind of set up. Tight end Gary Barnidge, well, that's obvious. He's a Pro Bowler, and for good reason. Andrew Hawkins and the first-round draft pick Corey Coleman slated as the wide receivers. Sadly, despite what they did at that position in the draft and the few holdovers they have, this for a opening day starting two for your wide receivers, I can't really complain about it. Remember, we're talking about the Browns here. So you can complain about a lot of these guys, but that's a different topic than should they be starting based on this roster or not. The offensive line, left tackle to right tackle, Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio. They have Cameron Irving slated at center, which I could have told you the day he was drafted 2 years ago was eventually going to happen. Yeah, he was only an okay center at Florida State, and the Browns used him with a first-round draft pick, and they had to use him at guard for obvious reasons last year. But I said right from the moment they drafted him, just you watch, when Alex Mack leaves, and it's when, and of course he did this past offseason, you're going to have to put Cameron Irving at center unless you get somebody better. They did not, so it'll be Cameron Irving at center. I agree with that. John Greco, veteran, pro, University of Toledo for his college days. Yep, I expect him to start at right guard. This will have competition. Right now, right tackle they have is Alvin Bailey. I'm not so sure about that. He could end up winning the competition, though. Defense, they're going to go with a 3-4 again. Xavier Cooper, Danny Shelton, John Hughes, maybe Desmond Bryant, but right now they're going with Cooper over Bryant as one of the defensive ends. Your linebacking core, Paul Kruger, Demario Davis, Chris Kirksey and Nate Orchard. I have no problem with that. Remember, Carlos Dansby's gone, so I have not really any argument I can have with much of that. Secondary, Tremont Williams. Yeah, they may follow Justin Gilbert, but I think his time is just about done as the flop that he was. Jordan Poyer taking over for Tayshaun Gibson because somebody has to. Abramian Campbell, he's got a lot of praise from the coaching staff in OTAs and things like that, so he may get the first crack at the other safety spot. And then one, all Browns fans, I'm sure, are hoping they get a healthy season out of one Joe Hayden, as he's a holdover, mostly because he was so injured last year. He barely played. So Browns fans definitely hoping he'll be back to form. Travis Coons, Andy Lee, and Charlie Hewlett. Are your kicker, punter, and long snapper. And like I said, Chris, outside of maybe whatever comes out of the right tackle competition, I guess I'll give it to Bailey for now, but I wouldn't put a lot of money behind that one, so to speak. Yeah, I could see them going Xavier Cooper in a starting lineup over Desmond Bryant. Bryant will still get a lot of snaps in there. And then you have to put some guys in. You lost everybody else to free agency, and this is the Browns we're talking about. And as I've been saying to all Browns fans who will listen to me since draft night, you have to treat this Browns as if it's day one of an expansion team, and at least look on the bright side. At least the expansion roster, in this case the actual holdovers, for right now is a little bit better than the expansion roster the Browns were expansion drafting back in 1999. But otherwise, just treat this as if it were day one, year one of an expansion team, because I promise you, Browns fans, if you do that, you'll have a lot better sleep on Sunday nights this fall. I assure you. 866-240-1065. You got any thoughts on that? Switching back to baseball before we take a quick time out and play back that great interview from Anthony Fenech to give you all your Tigers info. Here is your Reap Funeral Home Detroit Tigers report as, of course, game one of four for their weekend series in Chicago against the White Sox. It's four-game series, 7:45 pregame time. Catch it over, of course, on the AM side, Talk Radio 1470 WTOD, home of the Tigers for all 162 games. It'll be Mike Pelfrey. It's a Mike Pelfrey start. Looking for win number three. That's right. He's only 2-9, 4.95 on the year. I suppose that's a bright spot there, Tigers fans. His ERA is finally below five. That's got to count for something. Going up against James Shields, who has been horrid no matter what uniform, San Diego or Chicago, that he's been wearing this season, as he was an attempted move by the White Sox a month and a half ago that is totally blown up in their faces because whatever it is, James Shields just doesn't have it anymore. Anyway, the Tigers lineup tonight will look like this. Ian Kinsler leading off at second, Cameron Maybin in center, Miguel Cabrera at first, Victor Martinez cleanup at DH, Nick Castellanos in left, Justin Upton, or Nick Castellanos at third, I should say, then Justin Upton at left. Saul Lamaki is going to get the start behind the plate tonight. Yet another start for Mike Avilas in right field. I don't know about you guys, but I've been noticing it. Despite what Anthony Fenech said, and you'll hear it again here in a moment, Stephen Moy was sent down. They kept Tyler Collins up, but as a result, they've been starting Mike Avilas now in right field. One of the many reasons that prior to talking to Anthony, I was still scratching my head as to why they did that. And Mike Avilas is going to get his fourth straight start now in right, and then batting ninth to round out the lineup, Jose Iglesias. He is at short. There is your Detroit, your Reap Funeral Home Detroit Tigers report. As, of course, Reap Funeral Home the sponsors your Detroit Tigers piece, which you hear all season long here on Drive Time. And a salute and tip of the cap to all our other wonderful sponsors here on Drive Time that make this whole show possible. Of course, the Low Payment King, Ralph Mollick Jr. up there at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore, TAS Electronics, Fred Ott Inc., the Williams Suede Insurance Agency, ARCA Racing Series, Toledo Speedway, Flat Rock Speedway, and of course we'll talk with Stan Yee Jr. a little bit later in the hour for your ARCA Racing segment of the week, Toledo Blade and BCSN, Playground World, and Sakura Japanese Steakhouse and Sushi Lounge. All right, let's get that quick timeout. And on the other side, we're going to hear from Anthony Fenech, beat writer for the Tigers, Detroit Free Press. They're getting ready for their four-game series starting tonight in Chicago against the White Sox. Every series is big for the Tigers from here on in. We're going to hear all things Tigers. That's next here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time. Jim Cushlin in for Mike Miller here on this Thursday, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Back with Anthony Fenech after
local sports talk. It's Drive Time on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome back in. It's a Thursday edition of Drive Time, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushlin and Chris Lemieux hanging out with you here on this Thursday. We had fun in the extravaganza, still having fun here on Drive Time, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. We'll have your ARCA Racing Series segment of the week coming up in a little bit. Stan Yee Jr. will join us to give you all the lowdown on the Stan Yee Memorial 150 coming up Saturday night at Flat Rock Speedway. But for you Tigers fans who may have missed it earlier, that was a great interview. We touched on pretty much any subject about the Tigers you could imagine. Trades, the series, injury reports, all that good stuff. So as a result, for all those you may have missed it, I want to replay an interview we had earlier in the day with our good buddy, Free Press, Detroit Free Press, that is, Tigers beat writer Anthony Fenech. Well, to answer all things Detroit Tigers related, we welcome in a friend of the show. He is the beat writer for the Detroit Free Press for those Tigers. He is Anthony Fenech, joining us, I believe, from Chicago. How you doing, Anthony?
Pretty good. I'm actually on, I-94 right now. I'm about to drive to U.S. Cellular Field. What should be an interesting four-game series between the Tigers and the White Sox, so I will try to provide as many answers as I can.
Yeah, and this is an important series, so let's start with right there before we get into some of these other theoreticals. This is an important series. You took 2 out of 3 from the Kansas City Royals to start the break, but at home. Then you lose 2 out of 3 to the Twins, so from a Tigers point of view, no ground has been gained. There's still 7.5 out as of right now, and at 49-46, I think it is. Only a couple games. I know it's only a couple games over 500. I may have the one number wrong. And this is a team, Anthony, that at its height this year was only, 49-46. So they're 3 games over 500. At their height, and I believe this was the end of May before they had that, or Right before they had that really bad skid, the one that involved them losing seven in a row and all the talk of Ausmus is about to be fired happened, they were six games over 500. That's the high mark. That's the high water mark so far for the Detroit Tigers this year. And so this is an important series. In fact, this is a very important road trip because you got Chicago for four. That's a divisional opponent who's been fading. Then you go to Boston, and I kind of teased it this way yesterday, Anthony, that by the time the Tigers get to Fenway on Monday, that may be a division leader. Well, the Red Sox are already a division leader after just overtaking the Orioles yesterday. So with the deadline coming up a little less than a week and a half from now, this is the time that the Tigers either have to go on a run to do something to prove that maybe they can make a move, or who knows. But this is a very important time for the Tigers if they're going to stay in this race.
Yeah, absolutely. They really got to shake their stagnant ways. I mean, you're right. I mean, they're going to be going into Boston. And I think looking at the wild card race right now, because I think everybody thinks, rightly so, that their best chance to make the postseason is the wild card race.
And they're four and a half out of that at this moment.
Yeah, and looking at that race, I mean, you just look at some of the teams ahead of them, like, you know, Toronto and even Houston, teams like that, Baltimore. It's hard to say that the Tigers are better than any of those teams right now. So they're still kind of in a limbo. What they do, what are they going to do before the trade deadline? They got to come out here and they got to win this series from the White Sox, because, you know, a split just going into Boston, a split's just not going to get it done. They're just middling right now, not making up really any ground. That was a bad loss for the Twins yesterday when Verlander was pitching the way he was, and just the whole series in general. I mean, four runs against the Minnesota Twins is not good. So they're going to have to come out here, and they're going to have to get the job done against the White Sox, who I think are a better team than the record's shown. So I think it's going to be a dogfight of the series, so we'll see how it goes.
And you're absolutely right about that in general, whether you're talking the Twins, who they just finished up at Comerica Park, or you're talking these White Sox, where the Tigers will be first of four tonight. They have to be able to win these series. Splits won't do anymore. You got to take two out of three and three out of four at minimum from the teams you should take them from, which would be teams like Minnesota and Chicago. And I'm not sure because how they do it, because we talked about injury stuff, and I'll get to that here in a second, but you mentioned the word stagnant, and at times it feels that way. I mean, you know, despite the K-Rod, by K-Rod blowing it the way he did in that tie game of the ninth, it kind of masked the fact that after Ian Kinsler let off the bottom of the first for the Tigers, let off the game with that solo home run, they got literally bupkis the rest of the day against the Twins, who have the worst starting rotation in the American League. You can't be shut down like that with a series win against a team you need to beat on the line in your own yard. You can't have these things happen from here on out, or there won't be any playoffs at all.
No, absolutely. And I guess from my perspective, what you want to see, what you wanted to see over the last 3 days was a little bit more urgency. And that's something that you wanted to see, a little bit more urgency all year from the Tigers. They just were unable to show it. And, I mean, look, Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera are really struggling at the plate right now, and they're really hurting them. And it's only exacerbated by the fact that J.D. Martinez is still hurt. I mean, when you have those guys struggling and J.D.'s in the lineup, well, then he provides a little bit of insurance. Upton still hasn't been able to get it going. And really, the offense is not a spot on the team where you'd expect to fail them. But recently, it has. You know, it's just something that you always expect. You know, when I look at this team, you always expect there to be some light at the end of the tunnel, but we've yet to see that light. I mean, there's so many good baseball players on this team, but they just haven't been able to put it together yet.
No, they haven't. As we talk with Anthony Fenech, beat writer for the Detroit Tigers, Detroit Free Press, he's in Chicago as the Tigers getting ready for a four-game series against the White Sox. And all the series critical now. It'll be Mike Pelfrey, James Shields, by the way, in this one tonight. Let's get to some of the other things that are with the Tigers. Start with on the injury front. You know, we know where we're at right now is J.D. Martinez, Jordan Zimmerman, and Daniel Norris. What are their statuses right now? When can we expect some of these guys back? Because the Tigers need pretty much all three of them at this point.
Well, I would expect Norris to come back there after his next rehab start, which is going to be this weekend. I'm a little bit surprised that they didn't push Norris back into the starting rotation after his last one, but they want to get his pitch count up a little bit more to 80, 85 pitches. So that should be good. I mean, they're sending Anibal Sanchez out there. He struck out 10 last game. But, again, it's against the Twins. I mean, you got to take all these games against the Twins, even Matt Boyd's game, with a little bit of a grain of salt. And then Jordan Zimmermann, he's going to be throwing a bullpen today. So I will have a report on Twitter later on. But then after that, he should probably be good to go for a rehab assignment after that, which could probably be two rehab appearances because he hasn't pitched since June 30th. So I really don't expect Zimmermann until shortly after the trade deadline, which is kind of an issue. I mean, look, when you're looking at their team shaping up for the trade deadline, I feel like it's going to be it's big on Jordan Zimmermann to pitch the way that he was. Not necessarily in April because he was pitching out of his mind then, but he's a little bit in between what he was in April and the rest of the first half, a little bit closer to what he was in April. So they're really going to be counting on Zimmermann big in the second half, but I wouldn't expect him until the beginning of next month.
What about J.D. Martinez and that fracture in the elbow, because he's obviously been a big cog in this lineup for these last couple of years, and he's somebody that they desperately need back on the offensive end. What's his status at this point?
Well, as of the beginning of the week, he was throwing but still experiencing some pain, so he's still at least a couple weeks away, probably closer to three, and then you got the whole rehab assignment. He's going to need at least 4 or 5 days to get his swing and timing back. So really what was initially a 4 to 6 week kind of thing, looking to be like a 6 to 8 week kind of thing, which isn't really that surprising given the nature of the injury. So I wouldn't be expecting JD back anytime soon, but, they certainly need him if, you know, both at the plate and in the field. I mean, we all saw Steven Moya struggle out there. So they really need to get JD back.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, thank you for bringing up Steven Moya, because that was actually wonderful to inadvertently segue it. Anthony Fenneca, the Detroit Free Press Tigers beat writer. He's in Chicago getting ready for the Tigers-White Sox series. Because I've been dying to ask you this for about 2 days now. Why is it just that he was struggling, or is there another reason why it was Steven Moya who was sent down the other day when Justin Upton came back from the bereavement list and not Tyler Collins? Or am I just reading too much into this and he was just simply struggling, so get him at Triple-A at bats? What was the real reason there?
I think it was mostly defensive, and I mean the offensive struggles as of late didn't help. I think that they feel like Collins is a more well-rounded player at this point that they can put in right field. Given more consistent at bats. I mean, it is kind of interesting given, look, Moya's hitting with some power, and then Moya showed a lot more, he showed a lot of maturity at the plate than, he did in years past. So I was a little bit surprised by the move, but he was really killing them in the outfield. I mean, he was just really killing them. I mean, he wasn't taking right routes to the ball. He was too slow in getting the ball. He wasn't at the cutoff man. Just a really small thing. And I think that all factored in with his late struggles. I think they wanted to just get him some more seasoning in AAA. But look, if this offense keeps going the way it is, it wouldn't be surprised if he got called up here again shortly.
Yeah, and defensive struggles aside, Anthony, and even some struggles at the plate, if the Tigers were going to trade for anybody, is Steven Moya still on the hands-off list that they won't trade him, that they wouldn't trade him in any situation?
It would seem to me more likely than not he would be. Just because, I mean, they just don't fit up really well with some teams now on a trade front. Look, yeah, they need starting pitching, but look, once Zimmermann and Norris come back, they're not going to have room for a starting pitcher, and they're not ready to pull the plug on Mike Pelfrey. So I really don't, you know, the conventional wisdom is that maybe they can go get a back end kind of an arm. I don't see that right now. So I think Steven Moya is going to stay put. I mean, the Tigers have talked all along about keeping their cost control players, their prospects. It would be a surprise. It'd be a surprise if they packaged Moya with maybe a lesser known prospect to get a starting pitcher, because look, in a couple of weeks, there's going to be no room for that starting pitcher. So. It surprised me if they moved Moya.
And, you know, that's a good point, and especially very insightful about Mike Pelfrey, because one would think if they were to go get somebody, and then you get the Norris and Zimmermann back from injury, then logic would say that it has to be Pelfrey who would have to go to the bullpen in such a scenario. But if you're saying they're not ready to give up on that, and they're not going to probably make any package on the grounds that they're going to get two starters back, it kind of leads to the next question, something that I've been juggling around, Anthony, with some
callers these last couple days. I've been asking Tigers fans to call to tell me, would you rather have them buy, sell, or stand pat? And the reason, of course, is we know that this is a legitimate question right now is because three over 500, 4.5 out of the wild card, 7.5 out of the division, and you're a week and a half away from the deadline, they're kind of in that weird no man's land where it's a legitimate debate as to which path to go. Unlike, say, my Indians, who they're where they are and they're clearly going to be buying something. The Tigers are in kind of a limbo and you're not really sure which path they're going to go. Anything you're hearing to indicate which direction, buy, sell, or stand pat, that they may be looking at right now?
I mean, I think the words you brought up are spot on. They're a little bit in no man's land right now, and that's why I think this road trip. I mean, I don't know if it's critical to push the needle one way or another, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do because you're right. I mean, they just you say buy, but what do they have to give up to buy? You know what I mean? Where they're at in the standings right now. It's just, you know, I think personally from what I've heard from a couple of people within the organization is that they're going to be more of a stand pat kind of team right now. You know, if they could find an upgrade in the bullpen, I think they'd make it if it was a very cost effective kind of move. But I think their trade deadline moves are going to be, you know, getting Jordan Zimmermann back, getting Daniel Norris back, getting JD Martinez back, and hopefully having Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez hit like the way that they should. That to me is going to be their deadline moves because they simply don't have the prospect currency to make a big move right now or the kind of payroll to make a big move. And then to add that, I mean, there's just not a big starting pitching market where you can get a top four guy. So I know the Tigers have been aggressive in trade deadline past. This is a little bit of a different scenario, so I think they're going to be a stand-pat kind of team.
And not only is it a little different scenario because of the no-man's land they find in the standings, it's Alavila's first trade deadline as the Tigers GM. You could almost set your watch to what Dave Dombrowski was going to do to a small degree. You know, you're still not sure how Alavila would approach this, and it almost makes me think, especially based on what you said, because, you know, that's a good point. They're going to get some of these guys back from injury. They don't have a ton that they could make a package with. Would a possible plan be if they still want to try to be in this thing? Because I still think they're the best competition for the Indians in the division. I hate the Royals rotation, and they're a 500 team now. We kind of all know about Chicago. They had that really good April, and they've been mediocre ever since, and that's probably where they're going to stay. So that leaves you Tigers and Indians, despite the 7.5 game spread. Is this a situation where they may take that extra month, get some of these guys back from injury, and reconvene and see where they are at the end of August before that deadline?
Yeah, I could see that. Generally speaking, you don't make real big moves at the end of August. I know there's still the non-waiver or the waiver trade deadline there. That could be an option. But to me, it comes down to right now. I mean, you know, going into the season, we look at how, you know, Aníbal Sánchez is really, you know, the X factor there. Well, now it's Jordan Zimmermann. I mean, they're getting that big contract in the offseason. He really needs to stabilize that rotation. So I agree with you. I think they're easily the best competition for the Indians in the Central Division. But looking at the teams they're bunched together with in the wild card race, again, it's hard to put them ahead of like a team like, you know, Toronto or Boston or Houston. And I do think that, you know, when you're matching up the Tigers and Kansas City, I think they're pretty even, to be honest with you. So it'll be interesting to see how these next few weeks play out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And by the way, you mentioned Houston as one of those teams that is had a horrible April, and they're now right back in the thick of it. They're also only 4.5 games behind Texas right now in that West. Yeah, when the deadline itself hits next weekend, Anthony, we're all going to get an up-close personal look at those Houston Astros, because that's who's coming to Comerica Park next Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right when the deadline hits, which, you know, makes this stretch even trickier because we mentioned the 7 road games, first 4 in Chicago, then 3 at Boston. They take a week from today off, and then it's home for Houston, right, as the deadline's there, and that's not an easy team, obviously, either. A couple last quick questions before I let you go. You mentioned this a few minutes ago, and I've heard other Tigers fans mention this. that something's wrong with Miguel Cabrera. He's a 289, 18 homers, 53 RBIs. And, yeah, considering what we expect out of a Miguel Cabrera, and you mentioned Victor Martinez, who's at 291, 17, 55, for example, what is exactly wrong with them? Because, obviously, those numbers, we're used to them being a little higher from Cabrera. I got to say, I look at Victor's numbers, and I'm, for the most part, okay with that. So when I hear Tigers fans and even reporters such as yourself saying there's something wrong with Cabrera, what are we talking here?
I wish I could tell you what was wrong with Miguel Cabrera. I just think...
Are we just too spoiled expecting him to hit 330 with 35-plus bombs every year? Are we just too spoiled from this guy? Is that what part of this might be?
I wouldn't say we're too spoiled, but I would say that it's just he's just struggling right now. I think that there's a clear, that's the ticket machine here. That's the garage.
Well, we know where Fennec is, everybody. He's just getting a U.S. Cellular there in Chicago. Tigers taking on the White Sox. We'll have it for you. 7:45 pregame time over on the AM side. Continue.
It would not shock me if Cabrera was battling some issues here. I mean, whether it be lower body, this is not something that'll keep him on the disabled list, but something just the nicks and bruises of going through a baseball season. Because right now, at this point, it's not about Cabrera being 100% healthy. It's about being as close to 100% healthy as possible. But still, I think that, look, hitting the baseball is the hardest thing to do. And I think our standards for Miguel Cabrera are a little bit high. But look, when he's batting average at 300, I mean, Cabrera is a guy that steps out of bed and hits 300, you know?
Right.
With Victor Martinez, I just think that he needs to be a little bit more patient at the plate. Pitchers are being able to get him out by throwing himself out of the zone. And so that's what I think the situation with the Martinez. But both those guys need to kind of step it up here.
Now, I know you're getting to the ballpark, so therefore you got to get ready for tonight's game. So last question, Anthony Fennec, Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, joining us here on the ticket. Last question before I let you go. We had fun with the football version here on our show the other day. And Buster Olney, who's been hanging around the Mike and Mike guys, they had some fun with it the other day. 9 ways that he would improve baseball. I'm not going to read them all for you because we don't have enough time for that. But with you being a baseball writer, if you had one thing that you would throw out there to improve baseball, what would be Anthony Fennec's top remedy?
I saw a bunch of lists, and the one thing that stood out to me was the single-ticket doubleheaders, which are never going to happen because the owners are too money-hungry, and they're not going to give up a gate profit like that. You know what? People aren't going to like this, but I would go back to more of the human element. I'm more of a human element kind of guy. I like the arguing with the umpires. I think that I think baseball's missing a little bit of that now. But I would also change the whole process of the managers being able to get to communicate with the dugout in terms of the reviews. So, you know, there's a close play at second place. There's a close play at second base, and they get the word from the guy in the dugout or in the clubhouse. I would just have the managers go through on their own gut, and then I think that it becomes more of which managers are good at kind of seeing the play in the field.
No, and all those are great answers, and I love the doubleheader answer. I am fully aware it's never going to happen because the owners don't want to lose the gate. I've been a fan for years because everybody always complains, among other things, that, oh, the season's too long, and my response has always been, for at least 8 years now, Anthony, you want to shorten the season? I can shorten it by at least a week. Sunday scheduled doubleheaders, just like the olden days. Ta-da!
Yep, yep.
There's your extra week right there. But you're absolutely right. We both sadly know it won't happen because the owners don't want to lose that extra money, because that's what it always comes back to. Anthony, enjoy your time out there in Chicago. I think it's safe to say we hope this goes a little better for the Tigers. They're in a bit of a semi-funk right now. 4 in Chicago, then 3 in Boston. Sometime next week, whether it's before they leave Fenway or not, we'll have to get in touch with you again and see if we're any closer to some answers on what the Tigers might do at the deadline and where they stand. We always appreciate your time, and we'll catch up with you next week.
James, thanks a lot.
All right, that is Anthony Fennec, Tony, as it were, the beat writer for the Detroit Tigers for the Detroit Free Press, giving you a whole bunch of Tiger insights. And, he certainly did. And I was fascinated more than anything towards the end there, because I know that's been a subject. What is exactly the struggles right now of Miguel Cabrera? His numbers are, I'm still legitimately wondering, are we just spoiled from seeing what we've seen out of him the last 5 to 8 years or so? I think that's part of it. But the fact of the matter is, and there's been articles recently, not just Anthony Fenix, Detroit Free Press, but others in other places I've noticed very recently that are kind of saying, you know, Miguel Cabrera has been on kind of a slump for a little while now, and that's concerning. So I do get that, but it's going to be a tough road for the Tigers. 7.5 out in the division, 4.5 out right now. Wild card, 7-game road trip starting tonight in Chicago. Then on Monday, they go to Boston. And like I joked about yesterday, by the time they get, where Tigers will get to Fenway on Monday, they'll be a division leader. Actually, the Red Sox are already a division leader. And then after that, by the way, as the deadline itself hits, Tigers will be back at Comerica Park against Houston, who's played very good baseball since a bad April, and that's why they're right back in the thick of it as well. All right, we got to take a quick timeout here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore, TAS Electronics Local Sports Center update, check of weather, check of traffic. It has been raining. We've gotten a little line of some rain to slightly cool us off a bit, passing through Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan here in this hour or so. So a little slick on the roadway, so always be a little extra careful for that. Then when we return, it's our ARCA Racing Series segment of the week. Stan Yee Jr. getting ready for Saturday night, the biggest flat rock race of the season, the Stan Yee Memorial 150. And Stan Yee Jr., named after his dad, who was, of course, a fixture in this race. That's coming up Saturday, so we'll talk to him about that next here on this Thursday edition of Drive Time. Jim Cushlin in for Mike Miller, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. With love.
It's Drive Time on Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Off the bench and on your radio. Sitting in for Mike Miller, here's 106.5, The Ticket's Jim Cushlin.
And welcome back. Final few minutes here of this Thursday edition of Drive Time, driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. up there at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Jim Cushlin, Chris Lemieux in for Mike Miller here on this Thursday. I'll be back in, of course, tomorrow as Mike is out all week. And as we do every Thursday at this time, it is time for our ARCA Racing Series segment of the week. A big one, the biggest one, on Saturday at Flat Rock Speedway. It's the Stan Yee Memorial 150 in the late model series, and give us a preview of the race and how he thinks he might do in it. We have, and yes, the namesake is what you're about to hear, obviously. It is Stan Yee Jr., who will be racing up at Flat Rock in the race named after his father, coming up at Flat Rock on Saturday night. Stan, how you doing? Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, no problem. No problem. First of all, I got to ask you this. As our mutual friend Scott Schulte informed me of this, that you were just finishing up your testing, as all race drivers and such do before a race. So how'd that go today up there at Flat Rock? And I hope the rain that just passed through didn't affect you too much.
Oh, it didn't. It caught us just right when we left going down Telegraph Road. It caught us, so it worked out just right. Yeah, we did a great practice session. Basically, we did a little mock qualifying with our new tires, and we're a tenth and a half faster than we've been all year qualifying. So we're, like, in excellent shape right now for this race.
Now, and coming up, of course, it is the Stan Yee Memorial 150, the race named after your dad, who was, of course, a fixture in the late model racing series, and specifically this race for about 40 years or so. You guys, by the way, together won this race back in 2003. So from your point of view as his son, Stan, describe to me, when you come to this race specifically, what it means to you.
Well, it means a lot because, you know, my dad, he was a fixture in late model racing since, late 60s. He was an innovator. A lot of the stuff that's ran today is the stuff that he created, he designed years and years and years ago. You know, it's just a nice way to be able to reflect and to honor him and remember all the good stuff he did, because a lot of the stuff wasn't just the racing, the technical stuff. He really, really, really helped a lot of racers. He never really held too many secrets close to his chest. He was always ready to help somebody out. He was always ready to give them up to just to help somebody else run a little better. And, you know, this race every year just gives a chance to reflect, because he really was a great man. He was all around good person. And overall, really, really good for racing in general.
Yeah, no question about it, especially for our racing here, obviously, in this area. As we're talking with Stan Yee Jr., who will be racing in the Stan Yee Memorial 150 at Flat Rock coming up on a Saturday. Give me the lowdown in terms of this track up at Flat Rock, some of the ins and outs, and how you guys usually go about planning for a race like this.
Well, the thing is, first, it's a tight little bull ring, and it's 150 laps. It's a whole lot of laps on one set of tires. So there's a lot of angles to it, which make it really interesting. Drivers really love it because you got to have a really good car because it's a handling track. You can't really use a ton of horsepower in it, and it has to last 150 laps. So it takes a lot of driver temperament, takes a lot of driver talent, it takes a lot of driver patience. And then it takes a really good car on top of it. And then on top of it, you got to have a little bit of luck. And then you have to be really good just because it always draws the best cars in the Midwest.
Last question before I let you go is my clock is telling me I'm running out of time there. How's your season for you been going so far?
I tell you what, I'm having a great season. I think only one race out of this whole season, I finished out of the top five. I actually won last week. We were running really quick. We had our best qualifying effort, and we won the race. And like I said, after we tested today, we got even a little better. And so I'm having a great season. So I just hope to finish it out right.
It is the Stan Yee Memorial 150 coming up at Flat Rock Speedway. That's coming up on Saturday night. Stan Yee Jr. will be racing in the race named after his father. And best of luck to you. And it sounds like from your point of view, you're looking to make it two overall races in a row that you come out victorious. So best of luck to you up there at Flat Rock. And thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
That is Stan Yee Jr., ARCA Racing Series driver, joining us here on Drive Time. We do our ARCA Racing Series segment every Thursday here on Drive Time. That's going to do it for this edition. You got Tigers coming up a little later on the AM side. That's 7:45 Central Time and all, as they're in Chicago to take on the White Sox. And every series pretty much critical for the Detroit Tigers from here on out. Bob will be back in the big chair for the extravaganza. And then yours truly in for one more day this week for Mike Miller on a Friday edition of all our shows. So enjoy your Thursday night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.